Mr. President, thank you very much for taking the time to sit down with RT during your trip to New York City. Sir, I'd like to begin by asking you why you've decided to personally make this trip to New York to address the international body about the nuclear non-proliferation treaty rather than sending Iran's foreign minister or another top official from your administration.
I believe that the conference at the United Nations represents one of the most important gatherings in the world. Security is one of the most predominant issues nations and societies face, and the largest threat for security is from nuclear weapons. The world has been living under the threat of nuclear weapons annihilation for close to 60 years. Now, a lot of attempts have been made to reduce the threat, but they have been unsuccessful. The scale of the threats these days is far larger than it was 60 years ago. And as long as there are threats, real progress and real welfare cannot prevail. So this current conference is very important for those reasons. And I thought that with my presence, I will be able to assist the conference in arriving at better and more comprehensive decisions. So I considered it my responsibility as one member of this human society to be there today. I believe that if other colleagues of mine had understood the importance and significance of the gathering, they too would have participated.
Well, there was a participation in Washington, D.C. A few weeks back when President Obama did host a nuclear security summit. It is clear that relations between Iran and the U.S. have not thawed under the leadership of President Barack Obama. Mr. Obama promised to engage Iran in a way that the Bush administration did not. From your standpoint, what is the difference between President Obama and his predecessor?
Well, one big difference is that Mr. Obama has said that he would like to bring change, so we are waiting for those significant changes to take place. However, we think that there are too many differences of opinion that prevail in the United States, so it would be very difficult for Mr. Obama to carry out his viewpoints on all policy matters. I believe that differences within the ruling system of the United States administration and government are indeed very strong. At times, contradictory statements come from it.
Just to understand, the difference between President Obama and former President Bush is that President Obama says he wants to make change.
Yes, but of course there are many differences between the two. Mr. Bush represented the partisan, party system-based element that was deep-rooted in American politics with a large network of its own. His father was a president too, so their family has a lot of influence. But Mr. Obama is a newcomer and doesn't carry the same influence over his party as Mr. Bush did over his. But on the other hand, Mr. Obama had the support of the people, so they are different.
Speaking of the people, Mr. President, do you think that Americans have the wrong impression of you? Are you possibly misunderstood by your critics?
It's possible. I mean, after all we've had from the past differences with the United States government, consecutive U.S. administrations have worked against our interests. And in the U.S., large segments of the media are controlled by parties. So when those parties are in conflict with us, it's natural that the media also takes their direction. We like the American people, and we like all people from all nationalities. So I don't see us having any problems with people.
I'd like to follow up on that comment about the media. Any specific organizations that you feel target Iran in a particular way?
You see, for example, this must probably be the sixth time that I come to New York, and I have given interviews to various U.S. media reps. And almost all the six times that I've come here, their questions are always the same. So if their questions are all the same, there are only a few possibilities. A, either they agree on so many issues that all the concerns they have are similar. B, that they have regular gatherings to coordinate their questions. So it can be either or. The third possibility is that they are controlled from a single unit. We think it's the third possibility.
What's the most common question they all ask?
Well, for a period, it was mostly about Middle Eastern issues and the Holocaust.
Constantly being attributed to you in the U.S. media is that you, Mr. President, have said and are often quoted saying that Israel needs to be wiped off the map. Oftentimes it's interpreted that people in your country say death to Israel death to America. That's the way the American media translates it. Did you actually say that Israel needs to be wiped off the map to set the record straight?
Our position on Palestine and what we have said about it is very clear. We've said that 60 years of conflict and various peace proposals have failed to give results. We say that we must allow people there to determine their own future. As a result, we've proposed a free referendum. Here they say that if there is a free referendum, the Palestinians will definitely prevail, and then the Zionist regime can no longer exist. Let's just give the people there a chance to choose for themselves.
So your words were misinterpreted then?
It's possible.
Your visit here in New York to the United Nations addressing the international body does coincide with a U.S. push for a fourth round of sanctions against your country. It looks as though from recent statements, I don't want to speculate, but recent statements that the U.S. may be victorious. How do you think it's going to play out?
My presence here is to follow a larger goal, the humane goal, the one that is global. We are not concerned by sanctions. Of course, we don't welcome them, but we are not concerned by them either. We believe that they are oppressive and unjust. But just the fact that you mentioned that the United States is putting a lot of pressure means that what they have chosen to do is illegal, unlawful, and unfair. If in fact it is in line with international law, there is no need to put pressure on it to happen. Decisions are of value only when they are made freely. When it is done under pressure by power, it is naturally undemocratic. And when it is undemocratic, it cannot be accepted so easily. And several consequences occur. The credibility of such decisions gets lost. The credibility of international organizations is reduced. We believe that there is a group that is trying to bring Mr. Obama to clash with Iran or stand against Iran. When Mr. Obama is placed in the position of clash with Iran, then his motto for change is lost. Mr. Bush used to pass resolutions against us. Where did it go? Where did it take him? Where are we today? And where is he today? Iran is still advancing, and he is gone.
You point out often that the credibility problems the United Nations does have. In your speech, you noted the dissatisfaction that you have with the IAEA, the flaws that you believe the United Nations does have in being actually democratic, in being fair and just to all member states. And many people agree with you inside this country and out. Not everybody is a fan of the United Nations or feel the United Nations is fair to every member state. Having said that, why does Iran still engage with the United Nations if you feel that there are so many problems and so many contradictions and it's so unbalanced in terms of its fairness?
Well, the answer to your question is clear, because we consider ourselves member state of these organizations. We talk, we share opinions, and we make efforts to improve their structures. If you were here at the event at the conference today, or if you go again tomorrow, you will find that many member states happen to agree with Iran's positions. These are not issues that happen overnight. It is a result of the discussions, of travels made, the consensus that we seek to build with everyone that comes about. There are others who also believe that these organizations do not fully carry out their responsibilities. They too have gathered over years to discuss, share opinions, and today have arrived at a point where they believe that the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty has to improve and be revised. So revisions and reforms happen gradually, but destruction can take place quickly in one instance.
At least two non-permanent members of the Security Council, Brazil and Turkey, have spoken out against sanctions against your country. But most recently, the foreign ministers of those countries, at least one of them, was quoted saying that upon your arrival here and your address to the international body, it is so important for Iran to assure the international community that its nuclear program is only for peaceful purposes. Do you feel confident that when you leave New York, everyone, every member state of the United Nations, will be rest assured that Iran's nuclear program is only for peaceful purposes.
Their vision of the NPT is far more important than issues pertaining to one member state or country alone. If the whole world is revisited and reviewed and revised, then everyone benefits. All we do on our part is discuss and explain what we see is happening. The way we see Iran's role, it is a country that never brings pressure on others to force them to revisit their policies. So we are in favor of just talking with everyone to express ourselves and inform others of our views and reasons. It's up to others, and they have the freedom to choose whether they want to accept what we say or not. Obviously, we can't impose it on them to accept it. But we also know that the vast majority of the countries there agree with us. 118 member states of the non-aligned movement have issued declarations in our favor. But the veto power given to the permanent members of the UN Security Council creates an imbalance in decisions and creates injustice in the UN efforts to establish security for all. It takes out the democratic nature of the Security Council. And on top of that, you add the pressure that some member states bring on to the Security Council. It worsens the situation far more.
And that's where I'd like to ask my final question to you. In your speech, you said the possession or production of a nuclear bomb is not a source of pride. It is rather disgusting or shameful. Last month, it was reported in many media outlets that Iran announced that it will soon become a member of the nuclear club. Can you explain to me the difference of Iran being a member of the nuclear club, if that is in fact true, and you saying that the possession or production of a nuclear bomb is disgusting and shameful?
Nuclear energy has various applications. One is for power purposes, to generate electric power, electricity. Another is for medical purposes and for curing diseases. Another part is for industrial and agricultural sector. Another part is to identify very difficult diseases and to treat them. And many other applications that are very useful. Now, one deviation or application is the bomb. If you have the capacity to enrich fuel in order to use the positive applications that you have, that qualifies you as a member of the nuclear club. The nuclear club is not an officially registered club, it's just an expression of sorts. Anyone with the capacity is called member of the club. There I said nuclear bomb for no one, nuclear energy for everyone. We use nuclear energy, we cannot accept the bomb option. So we are a nuclear state, but one for peaceful purposes.
Thank you very much for your time.
Good luck.